Welcome to the Asian Women of Power podcast, where your host, Kim Chi Chow, shares tips, tools, insights, and strategies on how you too can create the life you love with freedom, power, and choice. Kim Chi will show you how to break free of your cultural boundaries and boldly live the life of your dreams. Please schedule a discovery call with Kim Chi from www.asianwomenofpower.com. And now, here's your host, Kim Chi Chow.
Today, more women are stepping up to start their own businesses. Having a good idea for a product or a service is not enough. You need to have the skills and knowledge about running, maintaining, and growing your business. The key for longevity of any business is the system. This is a special sauce that the franchise model is offering. Our special guest for today is Nancy Williams. Nancy is an expert in helping business owners select the right type of franchise for anyone who's interested in that business model. So please help me welcome Nancy Williams.
Hello, Kim Chi. Hello, listeners. Thank you for having me today.
You're welcome. We're glad that you're here. So, Nancy, what are some memories from your childhood that really stood out for you?
So there's several things I can think of, but, just giving you a little bit of background, I was African-American family, two-parent household. My mom was a stay-at-home mom, so my father was the only one working full-time. And we grew up in a suburb of Los Angeles. And it was predominantly white and Asian. And so, I didn't see a lot of faces that looked like myself. Certainly my classmates, but not a lot of role models, maybe a few teachers. So what that brings me to is my father is a Vietnam vet. And he is a voracious reader. So he loves history. He specifically loves African-American history. So in our home, we had a lot of information at our fingertips about our culture and history and sort of the struggles that we had been through and the things that we had achieved in spite of all that. So I received, he grew up at a time where it wasn't necessarily okay to be so proud of being African-American. He faced challenges in both his military and non-military life. So he had a lot to share with myself and my sister. And so I kind of gobbled that up. And it gave me a very grounded sense of self and pride that I may not have had without him, because again, there wasn't a lot of that around in the local area that I was in. So I think that certainly is something I remember from childhood, because it is absolutely stuck with me today. So, in addition to that, when I reflect on it, I would say the other biggest thing that I take from childhood is about working. So as I mentioned, my mom was a stay-at-home mom. So we were on a one salary income for the household, and it was, basics only. So if you wanted something above and beyond the basics of food and shelter and, just making sure you had clothes and things for school, you had to get it on your own. So we really started working at the age of 13. And we worked, our first job was in the local parks and recreation center. We were doing scorekeeping for both youth and adult sports. And so we were able to take that and then understand how important and special money could be if you used it in the right way. And so we learned that from very early on. So from anything from sports keeping, number keeping, to Baskin Robbins, to the local amusement park, to a real estate office as we grew up. So there was ample opportunity for us to learn how to earn money, learn about taxes, learn about saving, and what to do with it. So I think, again, that would be one of the other real standout things from my childhood was, our parents demanding that if we wanted something, we really had to work for it. And I really can't remember going for more than a couple of weeks since the age of 13 and not have a job or a business.
So how many siblings do you have?
I have one. I have an older sibling. We're pretty close together. She's 17 months older than I am. So relatively small family.
You say 17?
She's 17 months.
Months. Yes. Okay. Yes. Okay. So like almost 2 years old.
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly.
Okay.
So pretty close.
Wow. That is very, very, I think your parents has established a strong foundation for you.
Yes.
Right? As a reader, right? He's
right.
As a reader, he learned about history and he, you know, we do by watching the parent, what the parent does, right? So you probably also become a reader, right? Because you see your parent, your father read all the time.
Exactly.
And then you learn the skills of managing or create money from
correct
young, very young age. That is wonderful. Not yeah. many of us are fortunate to have that two things.
Yes. And I learned that. I've learned that so much, especially doing what I do now, how few people know and understand and have a good foundation for that. And even, you know, as good as my parents were at it, you know, I noticed some things that would have been great had they shared, because they were property owners that, you know, we owned our primary home, but they were also investment property owners. But I think my parents from an older generation. So that line between what you share with children and what you don't is a little bit more traditional for them. And getting into things like, you know, what we pay on a mortgage and how you get them, I think that, you know, didn't happen like it should. So as well as they did, you know, there's still such opportunity to share with young people what they're going to be facing so that they understand and prepare for it early on.
So give me an example, like what things that they did not share that you wish that they share early on?
I wish they would have talked a lot more about credit and FICO scores and credit cards and how to use them wisely and how they can help you. And then at the same time, how they hurt you and ways to navigate through that, when it's okay to borrow, when it's not, you know, those sorts of things. Yeah, I think it was easy for them to just say, don't ever borrow any money, which sounds great. But when you're a student and they're throwing credit cards at you and, you know, you don't have a lot of wiggle room, you need to understand why. And that no is just not enough, I think. So I would say, you know, things around, if I don't ever recall my parents talking to me about credit cards or FICO scores, it's something that they didn't use a lot of credit cards. They may have had one, so they probably didn't think much of it. But, you know, things like FICO scores and what you need to purchase property, they, you know, were very savvy in, and, you know, they had owned several pieces of property, but they just never really had that conversation.
Very good point. Yeah. And thank you for sharing that.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
Yeah. So what has led you to become a franchise broker, and why do you want to focus on serving minority women?
So I had a great career in corporate America in the telecommunications world for 14 years. I learned more than I could have ever imagined. I had an incredible staff. I had some incredible managers and teachers and mentors. So I can't say anything bad about my experience in corporate telecommunications. But after 14 years, there was a lot of changes going on, and I decided it's time to take advantage of the opportunity to leave on a high note, with a nice severance package, and understand and explore my options. So that led me to in my early years, I had other businesses. So at some point in college, I had a nonprofit organization where we worked with inner city kids on the weekends and took them to university campuses to expose them to that. And then after I got out of college, I went into a private record label deal with a friend of mine that I had worked with. And so I did that for a few years. And then I eventually got into telecom. So after 14 years, I felt I had enough experience to go off and start another business that should I choose. And I wasn't sure what that was going to be, but I liked the concept of franchising. I had known, you know, previous franchise owners. I, coming from a corporate background, appreciate having a support system already set up behind you, someone that can teach you lessons learned and keep you on that path that, you know, to success. So I knew I wanted that. And so I started my search for a franchise that might work best for me. And I wasn't even familiar with the concept of franchise consulting. But in your search, if anyone's ever done a search, you will get pop-ups that say, would you like to speak to a certified franchise consultant? And that's what I did. And, you know, as they say, the rest is history. For me, the decision to embark on this business was, and after speaking with a lot of the franchise consultants to validate the business, I decided, you know, I knew that there was very few women doing it, because I think I only was able to validate with one or two women. And then second of all, there was even fewer minorities. So I didn't speak to a single minority, and certainly not a minority woman, in validation. So I thought, this is my niche. This is what I'm here for. I have the history behind me, you know, proud to be an African-American businesswoman, and I could bring that to the table, to my own community and other communities that can relate to the experience. And that's exactly why I decided to go, you know, really focus in on women and minorities. And truth be told, a lot of times minority groups will not get into certain things because they don't feel comfortable. They don't have someone to usher them in to the business, the type of business they're looking for. So, you know, I thought I could be that advocate. I could be that ambassador for them. And I felt, you know, that I was trustworthy enough to be able to do that. I was comfortable explaining it, comfortable from a former management director perspective, that I could bring people along. And ever since, I haven't looked back since. It's something that I really love to do.
Wow, that's wonderful. Yeah, you see the opportunity to serve, so, and you step up.
Exactly.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. So let's say I want to own a business.
Yes.
It could be a franchise or business, right? And that generate about $10,000 a month, sure, of income. But I don't know what type of business that I want that fit me.
Sure.
So guide me through the process of identifying the right franchise for me.
Sure. So while revenues and incomes are one piece of criteria, we use so many others that I have to tell you, oftentimes the amount of revenue starts to slip down on the list as people explore the various opportunities. Some may find that the opportunities that have the largest revenues are ones they're just absolutely not interested in or don't think they would do well in. So again, we do take into account the individual's interest in revenue, but you know, we take it much further. So when a client comes to me, I will start off with several things. I'll do exactly what, you know, we did at the top of the podcast, which is I need to understand who they are, what their background is, why they're looking for a change, you know, what things they like, what things they don't like, what do they have a passion for, what do they feel they're good at, what have other people told them that they're good at. So we go through a series of questions to evaluate that. I will also send them a written business personality survey questionnaire that will help you work through that, and it sheds light on what type of personality you have or type of business would might be really good for you. And then it also provides insight as to your level of skill set and what types of franchises, not just the category or the sector, but size. You know, if you want to be, you know, does it make sense for you to build an empire, or should you just be an owner operator? So the business personality questionnaire gives a lot of good insight. So that's another tool that we'll use. And then once I learn a lot more about you, you know, there's some back and forth, and we settle in on what your what you can afford to invest in. And when we look at that number, we look at it in two ways. We look at it from how much cash or capital do you have on hand, and how much are you going to be able to secure in an SBA loan. So, you know, those are two different things you need to look at, but certainly the capital or cash that you have is one of the first drivers of what categories we can actually look at. So,
So is it like buying a house, that you need at least like 20% down minimum or something like that, right?
Yeah, it's a little bit more in business. So with the SBA currently, you would need somewhere between 25% and 30%, to secure the loan, and they will fund the rest. You would need a credit score of 680 or above. And the nice thing about most franchises is that they are already registered with the SBA in their loan program. So they've gone through some pre-registration steps to show that they're a franchise that's valid, that has business cases, and you know, that can be submitted along with the loan and certain paperwork that has to go along.
Mm-hmm. So besides SBA, is there any other channel that the prospect of the franchise can go to?
Sure. So so what we do, a lot of myself and my colleagues, we go to what we consider aggregators of funding. So if you were a client of mine, I would do an introduction to one of the aggregators, the big aggregators that I work with across the country. and set you up with a free consultation. And basically, they'll walk you through all levels of funding. There are others outside of SBA, and they'll walk you through all of those programs. But outside of that, just from a community perspective, certainly there are a lot of local grants that are provided that, you know, for those that are diligent enough and know, you know, where to look, and I can certainly direct them in that way. But there are local grants, other funding sources, there's partnerships that you can look into entering. And then, of course, you know, what's helped a lot of people these days, some sort of crowdfund, right? So you're going to want to offer something in exchange for investment into your new business. So those are just some of the various options that an aspiring entrepreneur has.
Whoa. I understand why do you say it is a daunting task.
It is absolutely daunting.
Oh my God, it's just too much, too many ends that I have to untangle, right?
It is. And for most people, you know, it's not knowing what you don't know and trying to pull all that together. So working with someone like myself, we know all of the steps. We've been trained, we've been certified. We know who to go to if we don't know an answer. We have networks of partnerships that can help you with legal issues, as I said, funding issues. So, you know, we have it at our fingertips. So rather than, you know, trying to find it all out yourself, it's just better to work with someone that's an expert in the field.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when, let's say, I'm just using an example, okay? Let's say I want a burger chain.
Sure.
That's the easiest one.
Yeah.
A burger chain or the chicken rice chain,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So what are the most important criteria for me to consider when I compare one brand versus the other brand in the same industry?
Yeah, so that's a very good question. So I would say in the same industry, you're going to be looking at basics such as cost. And when I say cost, I don't just mean the cost to enter the business, but I mean the royalties and the ad fees that you have to pay once the business is up and running. That's important to take a look at those and make sure that you're comfortable with what that is, so in comparison to each other. But I would also say that industry experience can be another way to look at them, two or three brands that are the same. So let's just say senior care or something like that. Some people are comfortable with what we call emerging brands. So emerging brands are brands that have under 100 units. And some people are fine with taking what they consider more of a risk. So statistics show that brands that have over 100 units tend to do much better off long term. So if they've hit that milestone of 100, then you know they're looking pretty good in the future in terms of how well.
What do you mean by unit?
So 100 franchisees.
Okay, got it.
Yeah,
okay.
I would say, you know, the number might be a little off because there could be multiple unit owners, right? So that's why when we say 100 units, it could be 100 franchisees, but it could be also 100 physical locations. So, you know, it just depends on the type of business that we're looking at, but 100 is typically a good milestone there. So you have some people that want experienced businesses over 100, you know, that are very stable. They can, you know, contact a lot of people and find out. Other people are okay with what we consider emerging brands. So maybe a newer food category that's on the scene, right? They want to get in early. They're early adopters. They think it's going to take off. And so they're more comfortable with something that's newer and maybe a little bit less established. So that's another criteria that a lot of people look at to say, am I comfortable with this? Am I not? So I would say that. I would also say industry differentiators. So what is it about each of those brands that you're looking at that say that, you know, create a differentiator for them in that space? So again, I'll go back to senior care because that's one that, you know, a lot of senior care businesses give the same services. But when you start really looking at the details of how they give those services, or maybe they do, maybe there's a brand that doesn't just do seniors, maybe they do disabled. Maybe they do people that have just been, you know, released from the hospital and they need, you know, home care for a little while. So those are the things that you want to look for in various brands on what's differentiating them from each other. So those are some key things to look for sure.
Mm-hmm. So does the franchisor require the franchisee to own and run the franchise? once they bought it?
Sure. So again, another really good question. It depends on the franchise. So let's stick with senior care for a minute because we're already here. So most senior care companies, they want owner operated. And that is because that is a very sensitive, hands-on business that is involving lives. And they don't want just, you know, someone that's farming out, you know, all of that work and not being hands-on, because it is a very sensitive business, you know, to say the least, emotional business, and they prefer that. But you brought up burger chains, chicken chains. That's usually the case. You get a lot of multi-unit owners who have the capital to hire a operations manager, either to oversee a couple of locations or one at each location. And they're just in a totally different business. It's not really about food for them or cleaning, you know, cleaning supplies. It's about building an empire of a business and then hiring the right people to run it. So again, it depends on the model, the sector, and then the available capital that you have to actually create the business.
Mm-hmm. So do I have to move if I want to own a franchise that has not been, you know, registered in my state or in my town yet?
Yes, you would have to move. If the franchise has not been registered in your state, they're just not allowed to practice there. There's no option there to be a business. So you would either have to wait until it gets there. A lot of times, you know, if we're working with, you know, a franchise broker or consultant, they can call the franchisor and ask, you know, either when are they going to be registered, or actually, I have a great client, I would like you to register in the state. We also have that influence over franchisors all the time. They may be just regional, but they don't think they have enough interest to register, say, in California. So we work together, and they will, you know, if we have a viable candidate, we can certainly ask them to register and be okay. So in terms of moving, I wouldn't recommend that. It's interesting because Texas is the top franchising state in the country, and it makes sense. So it's a lower cost of living. They've got some tax breaks. They, you know, lots of space, lots of suburbs that are, you know, cropping up. So it makes sense that franchises are there. And I do get calls from clients saying, I should move to Texas so I can open a franchise, and because it's not as expensive as it would be, say, in California, New York. Of course you could move. And I have worked with people that are in transit and are asking me to find them a franchise in another state, which is no problem. But a lot of times franchisors really want people that are in the community, know the community, and have community relationships, because that's what's going to build your business. So if you move to some place where you're not really familiar, you don't have that network of people, it can be a little bit risky in terms of success. So again, depends on the brand.
So besides the operation and human resource management and things like that, does the franchisor educate us or teach us on how to build community, you know, how to enroll the community to come and support our business once the franchise open?
Yes, love that question. That's one of the reasons that I do love franchises. And I don't want to say all franchises are excellent at this, but the ones that I work with, I've been amazed at how hands-on they have been with my clients in terms of helping them to open the business and just what you do after that and how you connect with the community. So the first part of your question, in terms of training, I love franchises for the fact that they fully train you on the business. And I don't mean just, you know, how to flip a burger or anything like that. We're talking the financials, profit and loss statements, things like that, that are going to help you be a good business owner, no matter what sector you're in. So all of that. And then, of course, on how to run that specific business. And then the full aspect of marketing, that is huge. And another nice thing about franchises is most franchises have a complete database that the franchisee owners can use and leverage. That's marketing tools, local marketing tools, flyers, discount on printing, how to build a Facebook site for your business, how to, you know, go use Twitter to leverage, you know, that relationship in order to grow your business. So it's a full set of that. And a lot of them, even if they don't have that talent in-house, they will contract a third party. It could be another coaching franchise or something like that, that comes in and works with their franchisees to help them become really great owners. So Yes, there's a lot of that that goes on. And as I said, the really good franchisors, they have a complete packet and some world-class information that helps people learn how to run the business.
So why do you think it's easier to choose the wrong franchise than the right one, even though we have so much resources available on internet?
Yes. So I would say because a lot of times people think they want one thing, and then when they start to learn about it, they realize that that's not really what they want. And our favorite example is using something like Subway. And while I love Subway, it's a great brand with a great product. People saw, everyone's flocking to Subway, so I think I want a Subway. That's what I want to own, right? So they come to me and they say that, and I say, okay, well, you do realize it takes, quite a bit of sandwiches to sell, right? $5 sandwiches to make what it is you told me you wanted to make, right? And then I start pointing out things like the high overhead. So, the food sector has a much higher overhead than something like cleaning, because you've got all these employees that are part-time, and, you've got a building that, is very elaborate. It has upkeep, overhead, leasing, all of those things that a lot of other businesses don't have. So the profit margins tend to be a little bit, less than a lot of people expect in fast food. So take that. After I've explained that to them, then I go to the other side and say, and you do realize that if you have someone a part-time employee that calls in sick, you're going to have to go behind the counter if you can't find, And so people start saying, by the way, it's 7 days a week, right? So with long hours. So once you start really explaining to them, it doesn't seem like such a great business investment. It's not going to fit in with your lifestyle. So, a lot of people are working in corporate America right now, and what they're not looking for is to spend 7 days a week necessarily, out of home. Because they do a lot of that in the corporate world. So they're looking for a little bit more work-life balance. So you start to talk to them about what are your short-term goals, long-term goals, what's your family time like? What type of wealth are you building? Is this going to be I want to build it up and sell it and move on to something else because I love starting businesses? Or is this a family legacy? Are you building this so that your kids can work there and you can pass it down to them? So a lot of those, so again, back to the original question, which is, why the highest performing franchise might not be a good idea for you? It's because it may not fulfill what you're looking for in terms of owning a business and why you're even on the pursuit.
Wow. So that's the reason you are here, right?
It is. And also I think, part of your question was about, we can do so much research on our own. Of course, these days we absolutely can. There's so much on Google and other various platforms that you could look into. But the true part is franchisors are not going to put everything out on the internet. So no matter what you're looking for, you're probably not going to have the information I have. And because I have a personal relationship with these franchisors that I work with, I can pick up the phone and ask a question. I can do things that you may not get that same attention because you're one of 100 people filling out an inquiry on their website. So it's really beneficial to work with somebody that has, their hands in the industry on a day-to-day basis.
Absolutely. I concur and I support you, and I see the value of working with the franchise broker, right? Do you call yourself franchise broker?
Usually consultant. The reason for that is that we're not really brokering anything. We're really counseling people that are looking for a new opportunity, and we're counseling them and coaching them on the best way to go about it and making some recommendations. And interestingly enough, our job is also to make sure we're presenting qualified and strong candidates to the franchisor. So we're also, consulting with the franchisor to make sure we understand exactly what makes a good owner in their particular brand. So it's really more of a consultative relationship than a broker.
Mm-hmm. How long is the process from evaluating a franchise to officially owning a franchise? If my credit score is good, if I have 30% down payment, so what would be that duration?
Sure. So someone coming to me is kind of the first step in the process. And then we spend, a couple of days. It could be quick. If I've got people come to me and say, I know my personality. I've been looking into this particular sector and I want recommendations for it. It can be relatively quick when I can get them into an introduction with the franchisor to start having the conversations to move to the next steps. So the short answer is legally, which is mandated by the Federal Trade Commission, which franchises are under, a candidate must possess in their hand the franchise disclosure document, which is sort of the Bible of the brand. You must have it for 14 days legally. So if you've spoken to a franchisor, you both think it's a great fit, they're going to email you out a copy of the FDD, the disclosure document, and they're going to ask for a signature, an electronic signature, acknowledging that you've received it. And from that point on, 14 days later, you could actually sign an agreement and be an owner of a franchise. So that's the quickest. I would say that most people are on a 60 to 90 day cycle. And they're on a 60 to 90 day cycle if they are really interested and have done some homework. So I think the stat says that people consider buying a business at least 3 times before they actually make a move. And that could be, that could be 3 years. It could be 3 times in a year. It depends. But that's kind of, the statistic on that. So if someone comes and they've done their homework and they really feel they're ready to go, we will start getting them into an introduction with the franchisor within the first week or so and have them talk through that. The second step, again, after receiving the franchise disclosure document, is doing what we call validation. So validation is what you're going to do when the franchisor gives you a list of current franchisee owners of the brand. And you're going to want to reach out to those franchisee owners and talk to them about their business. Any questions you can think of, and I certainly have tools that I can help with my clients that need a list of questions or want some guidance on that. But you really are going to want to feel comfortable that you've made enough of those validation calls that you understand the business and what is expected. So that's kind of the next step in the process. And then, we have intermittent calls again with the franchisor. If it's a brick and mortar, you're going to be having real estate conversations, leasing conversations, where's the best place to be. So all of that is happening. And then what we call close to the final step and before signing agreement is we do recommend having a discovery day at the headquarters of the franchisor. And that allows you to really experience the operational team firsthand. A lot of people make their decision after that meeting because they'll see the headquarters, they'll connect with the team, and they'll just walk out of there and say, this feels like the right place for me to be. And so it's a very important step if you can do it. They've been doing a lot more. Right now they're doing them virtually, of course, but some franchisors have moved to virtual just for affordability and those sorts of things. But those are kind of the steps. And again, depending on how much you're borrowing from the SBA, if it's less than $120,000, that's kind of their fast track program. They can approve a loan in 14 days for that. It's pretty quick. But anything over that, it could take 6 weeks or that sort of thing. And keep in mind, for a brick and mortar, the SBA loan is not actually final until you've actually signed a lease. So the approval of that is contingent on your ability to actually find a location and that it's within the cost structure that you put together when you applied for your loan. So it's important for SBA to marry those two things up.
What's the range for the costs of a franchise?
So I wish I had an easy answer for you on that, but I really, really don't. So I can tell you that on the lower end of the scale are going to be more of the consultative franchises. Mm-hmm. So things like travel agent is going to be, somewhere between, it's usually around $10,000 and they'll finance 50% of that. If that's, if that's where you're headed with that. But there's coaching programs that are in the mid, 20, 25 range. There's property management that tends to be more on the affordable side. And then when you're getting into 50, 75, you're looking at, starting to look at senior care opportunities there. You've also got children's education. There are some less expensive, but children's education, tutoring, STEM, STEAM, specialty, classes, music, cooking, those sorts of things, because you'll need a facility. So you'll see that. And then, 100,000 up, you're starting to look at more of the brick and mortar locations. But, commercial cleaning, you can get into, great businesses under 100,000. you know, everything goes all the way up to the millions, of course, when we're talking McDonald's or those sorts of brands, tier one.
Mm-hmm. So let's say $1 million, let's say for McDonald's, to open a McDonald's franchise, that is the cost of getting a franchise, not the location is not included, correct?
That is correct. That is correct. So I believe that most McDonald's, they require that you own the land. So it's not in a situation where someone can be removed, right? So what a McDonald's would not want to happen is that a landlord go, and actually we've seen some of those cases with older owners that did initially, you know, lease their, you know, there's a commercial lease, have a commercial lease. And they were surprised because the landlord decided they wanted 3 times the rent and they were unable to deliver on that. So they would either have to find a new location or they'd have to shutter the doors. So in most instances, you know, McDonald's is looking for someone that can afford to, you know, either lease to own or have some type of commercial ownership over that property in that space so that there's no, you know, battling about raising it or when the lease is up, you have to leave because I have someone else here. So that's usually the case. But on a smaller note, a lot of branches, a lot of different businesses, they will help you negotiate a 7 to 10 year lease. It might be a clothing store, you know, resale of clothing, you know, a Batteries Plus is another example of where you could, you know, lease the land. It's more of a warehouse type space. But there are, again, similar to restaurants, there are other sectors such as office space rental, so shared workspace, that's absolutely, you must own that land and, you know, figure out, well, I shouldn't say absolutely, but there are brands that require that you purchase the land. Others will work with you and to solidify long-term leases, because again, we don't want to be kicking people out of their business offices, you know, in the middle of that. So there are those and salon suites. So, you know, hair salon stylists, they have suites, shared office space or share suite space. Those are others that, you know, that work really well for people that have access and own commercial land.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I understand that. I watched the movie about McDonald's,
mm-hmm.
and they said that their business is not a burger. Their business
right.
is real estate.
It's the real estate, correct.
Right. And now I understand why. Yeah, because they don't want, you know, the franchisor have to be, you know, to move, right? Because it's the business tied into a location, and they did a lot of research about where is the best place to have a McDonald's.
That's correct. That's
so it's
correct.
Really, really, really good. And that's the reason that you pay high price for a well-known franchise, because they did all of those research.
They are. And the brand is very strong. It's recognizable. People feel that while it's a larger investment, it's less risky. And in some cases it is, but, you know, let's just say most people walking around, they cannot afford a McDonald's or a Burger King. So, you know, you can work your way up to it, but I tell clients that all the time, just because you come to me and you have a brand that you really love, you know, maybe start off a little bit smaller, start off in something that's, you know, similar to it and learn about it. And because let me tell you, once you have a business that's successful, you're going to have a lot easier time asking the bank for more money, right? To either expand that business or buy something else. You have, you know, proof of concept. You've shown that you are a good business owner and that you're diligent. And again, I love franchises for that very reason, because they have built themselves so that they are scalable. And if you would like to grow and grow into an empire and multiple locations, they make it a lot easier for you to do.
Mm-hmm. Who is your competitor and why working with you is a better choice?
Yeah. So in my business, I, you know, others may see competition. I don't really see that. For me, it's probably not the best to compare it to real estate agent, but because I know obviously there's a lot of competition there, but it's similar in the fact that you really want to find someone that you connect with and work well with, and you think has your best interests at heart. So finding that person is going to make you feel much more confident about the process. And that the person is on your side and not just trying to gain a commission off of, you know, selling you just any franchise. So I think it's important to, you know, interview a couple of people or, you know, look for people that maybe have something in common with you. And as we talked about earlier, That's why I got into this business. I wanted to be able to have other African-Americans and women of color see me doing this and understand that you can become very well educated and it's less of a risk the more that you know. You have someone that's going to be here that you can ask questions to, or if you're in a panic or something that you may not know you should be asking for. That's why I'm here to help you and be your ambassador. So I don't really see it as competition. I've had clients that have been working with me and someone else, and at times they've ended up going with the recommendation that I made, and then other times they've decided to go with, you know, the other consultant. So, and I'm okay with that. I want to work with people that feel a connection with me, feel that I'm there for their best interest, and that even after, you know, they've purchased the business, that we'll still have an ongoing relationship. If they need something, they can call me, and I will continue to do what I can to assist.
Wow. So that relationship is still going on after they purchased the franchise?
Yeah. So I would say it depends on the client. So I have clients that, you know, have owned several businesses. They really were just coming to me because they wanted to know about a specific brand they had seen, and they wanted the kind of the inside scoop, or they had a sector that they were interested in and wanted me to recommend a couple of brands. And they've done it, been there, done that, purchased it in a matter of a month, and sort of moved on. And I'll reach out to them occasionally and see how they're doing. But there's other people that call me and say, you know, hey, what do you think about this? Or I had a client that bought a business, and 8 months later he said, I'm doing so good in this business, I'm ready for another one. So it is, you should, you know, I do my best to keep an ongoing relationship with those that feel they're, you know, going to need something. But it's also beneficial for me because I can also find out from a client whether or not the franchisor is living up to what they said they were going to do. So if it's a situation where the franchisor is not delivering on the promises, I can help them, get what they need. But I can also make a mental note of that and say, you know, if this doesn't get better, there's no sense in me recommending this franchise. So having an ongoing relationship helps all parties.
Absolutely. So who pay you? How did you get paid?
Yeah, that's important, right? So that's the other thing about franchise consulting that I love, particularly working with women and minorities. And I can tell you that in my community, we have a tendency to fear government and fear organizations that we're not familiar or comfortable with or have never worked with before. So there can be this underlining, you're out to get me, you're going to take my money attitude. And so one of the reasons I love franchise consulting is that our services are 100% free to our clients as it relates to, you know, helping them get into a franchise that's going to work for them and their families. So the nice part about that is they don't feel they're paying some money to someone that's going to steal their money and just take off and not deliver a service. We are compensated by the franchisor. If we are to place a client into a brand, we have an agreement of a commission that will be a result of that placement. And so that's where the payment comes in. That's where the commission comes in, the compensation. But I also like it because I represent over 500 different franchise brands across the U.S., Canada, and certainly internationally, depending on the brand where they're established today. So also, it gives my clients a bit more confidence that I'm not just pushing five brands down their throat and they need to go to these five brands. We really can take the time to go through what they're looking for and what they need and assessing that personality that they have to find the right one. We've got plenty to choose from. So, you know, it's not, I'm really not trying to put, you know, a square, you know, peg in a round hole. I really am looking for the right fit out of the various, you know, numerous brands that we have.
So you say that you work with a little bit more than 500 brands across United States and Canada and international?
Yes, international. We've got a lot of brands that have presence in Mexico, the Middle East, Africa. There's a lot of auto body auto, you know, shops that are in a lot of those countries, but there's also some food brands as well that are, you know, dispersed throughout. So yes, quite a few, over, you know, 132 different sectors, you know, of those brands. And I would say that in the event that a client, say they're driving down the street or they're seeing something on TV and they're like, hey, I really like that, they can call me or send me an email and say, do you know anything about this brand? And if I don't represent the brand, I can always pick up the phone, figure out who to call. I've got a good network across franchising. And then I can interact with their franchise team and see, are they working with brokers? Are they open to working with brokers? And in the event that they are, we can sign an agreement and I'll do my introduction for my client and get that ball rolling. In the event that they're not, I do instruct my client that, you know, I'm happy to help you. I'm just not going to dump you off, but you are really going to have to take the lead on going to and working directly with that brand. And I can certainly coach you through what that looks like.
Mm. And that case, the client will pay you, right? Because you're giving them support without the franchisor.
Yes, it depends. It depends. So, you know, in that case, sometimes if the franchisor is a very experienced franchisor, they're not going to really need my services. So what you'll see a lot of times is what we call the tier one brand. So the McDonald's, they have full in-house departments that are constantly, you know, working on franchisee and candidates' needs. So I don't know if I would charge. I typically don't charge for that because if a client even does call me after they're in the network with those particular brands, they it's rare that they're going to need something. Those brands have been doing it for a very long time. They're very professional at it. They usually will answer every question that you have. So normally I wouldn't charge anyone, but you know, if it's a whole nother project, there are things, cause people come to me with very sophisticated projects or things that they're looking for in the market. It could be a resale. It could be a resale of multiple units. Then that could be an opportunity for me and for us to work out a fee structure.
Mm-hmm. So what are the valid concerns that most people have before they purchase a franchise?
Well, I guess it would be the same thing that you are fearful of if you were to start your own business, right? So fear of failure is going to be the number one. And we spend a lot of time coaching on fear of failure because it is a little nerve-wracking when you're thinking about going from a steady paycheck every 2 weeks and bonuses to, you know, making it happen on your own. So we spend a lot of time on trying to overcome that fear. And one of the things I do share with my clients is if you are, you know, 85 to 90% sure, that's probably as sure as you're going to get. Because most people are use that 10%, you know, 15% fear as a way to drive them to be successful. So it's very rare that someone comes to you and says, I'm 100% sure, I have no more issues, no more worries. But, you know, to get that close is something that, you know, you really should work on. So, you know, so fear of failure. The cost, am I going to be able to afford this, you know, and just delving into that. I always really encourage people when they come to me and they say, I have $75,000 cash to put down. I really wouldn't recommend doing that. I mean, you should be saying to me, I have $50,000 in capital, right? Or, you know, make sure you're giving yourself enough wiggle room that you're not spending every penny that you have and don't have anything to fall back on. So being realistic about, you know, what it's going to cost, what you're leaving yourself with and the wiggle room that you need to make sure you have. And then, you know, again, just goes back to the fear. What if I do it and I don't like it? You know, that's people who are like, I thought I wanted a
sandwich. That's a good one. Right? Yes.
I thought I wanted a Subway. I love their sandwiches and they're so friendly to me. And then I get in it and I'm like, oh, this is not what I thought. So again, but we have techniques to get people past that, to either make a better decision in the beginning so that you don't hit that wall, but also just the confidence that if you get into a business and it doesn't work, this is franchise, this is independent, it's not the end of the world. That you will learn a lot, you will recover. I remember speaking to a woman that owns a very successful spa enterprise. And she always said to herself, she was in insurance for a long time, making a lot of money. And, you know, her husband would say, well, why don't you know, you really want to start your business. Why are you not starting it? And she's like, because if I lose the money, I will be homeless, you know? And it's like, we always think of the worst case scenario, which is usually not the case. So again, just getting people to understand that, you know, failure is a part of life. You know, you cannot do so well. We can work on how to improve that. That's why I like franchises, because in a franchise situation, whether people really believe it or not, the good franchisors, they want their franchisee network to succeed. It's really important to them because that's a fundamental part of their success. If they have franchisees that are failing, then new clients or candidates that are coming in, they're not going to be able to validate well. So you're never going to get additional, you know, owners onto your networks. That's one of the reasons that, you know, you're not in it alone. You've got the franchisor that has a stake in it. But the other thing is, as I mentioned earlier, they are registered with the FTC. They're also most of them registered with SBA. So they have to file every year. They have to file every year like a business and say, this is my franchise disclosure document. I have changed something. I have not. So there's a process that you have to register in certain states every year. And the FTC will look at that document that says, this is the number of doors we closed and this is the number of doors we opened. And they will, you know, that can red flag. And so there is a concern there and they don't want to be that franchisor that's getting flagged. And then on the SBA side, because they are registered with the SBA and a lot of owners do have SBA loans, if they have a situation where a lot of owners are failing and not paying back their SBA loans, that could get that franchise kicked off of the registry. So there are, you know, there are downsides or repercussions to franchisors not picking good candidates and not picking people that really want to succeed and are trying. And there's no benefit to not helping them when they're struggling and making sure that they're, surviving because it's a symbiotic relationship. Everybody's in it together.
I feel great. I feel great when you say these things because, I think working with you is like working with a coach.
Yes.
But it's focused on the business, this kind of business.
Yes.
Right? Because, yes, fear, failure, the cost, what if I change my mind? What if I cannot handle it and things like that? Those are key things that will stop us.
Correct.
Right? From achieving our dreams.
Correct.
And it's important to work with somebody who are trained in doing that. Right?
Right.
So in my line of work would be life coach, a coach who have walked the path and who know what's best for you. Right?
Correct.
And then in your line of work, somebody like you who have experience and certified in working with client who are, you give them emotional support.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah.
Yes, they can come to me and they can say, I want to buy a franchise, but I'm afraid I'm going to fail. I don't know how to handle it. Yes, I might be able to help them reduce the fear of failure or get rid of those.
Right.
You know, we dig deep to get into the limiting beliefs and other beliefs that hold them back.
Right.
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 But yeah, I think working with you would just like get to the point. What are the fear that people have when they start something new and big, like buying a franchise?
Right. I think it's the coming to someone to say, I don't even really know where to start. Right. So you always have to, you know, a lot of times when people think about just, you know, general business coaches or life coaches, they're coming to you for something specific because they have a problem or something's not working in their life. And a lot of times for me, it's the same thing. Someone will come to me and say, I've wanted to own a business since I was small, but I don't have an idea and I don't have an original idea. So it's not like I'm going to go get a patent. You know, not everybody has that creative mind to create a new product or service. But then they also say, but even then, I don't even know where to start. So it's a starting point for people that specifically know that this is, you know, there's something in them that's driving them this way. It's also taking people that are in corporate situations that say, I've spent all this time getting this education and experience, and I've sort of hit this level where I think I can do it on my own. But again, I need someone to help me bring it together, just like I have in the corporate world. I call on finance to bring me this, or I call on operations to bring me that. So they understand how to piece that together, but they need someone to help them, you know where to start. And then the other thing I was going to mention specifically to women, because we're talking about this, is that you would be surprised at the number of women that I have had conversations with or coached that say, how do I convince my husband to either let me do this? And I know that sounds a little bit, or support me in doing this, right? Because there's a difference there. There's a, my husband will give me the money and say, go off and do it on my own, but I really would rather have him support me. I want him to, you know. So it's that conversation. And I think when I first started this, I was not, because of how I was raised and very independent, that wasn't a question that I expected to get as often as I do. But it is something that you have to end up talking to more, women clients than you would hope to. because it can be a very sensitive subject.
Absolutely. I think that's a number one concern from a client, from people who are considering hiring a coach, right? But they always say, I don't know, you know, this kind of money, I don't know if my husband gonna support me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, support me means like agree for me to pay this amount of money to work with you to improve my life.
Right.
We have to like addressing that and say, yeah, you know, how often do you allow other people to make the decision for you about your life?
Absolutely. But it's even more important in franchising, because a lot of times a franchisor will require the spouse to be a guarantor on there, because it's obviously, you know, that relationship is going to be very intimate when it comes to any issues with the franchisor or issues with the marital relationship. That is going to negatively impact the franchise. Franchisors want to know that the husband and wife are on the same page, even if the spouse is not going to participate on a day-to-day basis, but there has to be a level of support for someone to do really well in a franchise business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, what do you want people to do if they are interested to find out more about your service? Where should they go?
Yeah, so I'm really excited about this. Folks can go to your website, and under the sponsorship is Invaluable Franchise Consulting, Nancy Williams. You can click on there. That'll launch you to my site. You can request a free consultation through that. You can also learn more about me and how I got to be doing what I'm doing. I also write for a few magazines, so you can access those articles there. So again, you know, excited to go that route. You can also call or text 510-957-5901 and let me know if you're interested in a consultation, and certainly if you text me, we can set up some time. I can send you my calendar link and we can do it whenever it's convenient for you.
Thank you. And I have learned so much, so deep from this conversation, this interview. I learned much more about franchise, you know, owning a franchise. So I appreciate you for being here. And I'm also appreciate you to be our sponsor for the podcast, Asian Women of Power podcast.
Absolutely. And again, I'm so excited to partner with you, because I think we both feel the same way about empowering women to make sure they go after what they want. And as you say, speak up, stand up, and you certainly in business have to show up. And I did want to mention that if you, you know, in any way you contact us, if you let us know that you heard us through the Asian Women of Power podcast, then we'll definitely send you our top five list of pandemic-proof franchises. I find that very interesting. We've been spending a lot of time over the last 6 weeks looking at the various franchises that have really come aboard and started to flourish during the time of the pandemic. And a lot of people are interested in learning about those businesses that are actually thriving and are going to be transformed after we come out of this.
Yes. I highly, highly recommend you, our listeners, to take that advantage, the Nancy's offering right now, because she doesn't offer this all the time. And if you mention about Asian Women of Power, you heard her from the Asian Women of Power, get in touch with her. She will give you a special treat.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
And she will spend more time with you to help you feel more confident, so that you can speak up, show up, and stand up powerfully and confidently. And I think the key for an independence is to be able to do that, to be able to speak your own voice, speak the truth about what you want and what you stand for, right?
Yeah, correct.
So, yes, thank you. Thank you so much, Nancy, for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Yes. To our listeners, what is the number one thing that you will do to claim your independence? Please don't forget to subscribe to the Asian Women of Power podcast and the Asian Women of Power YouTube channel. Until next time, live life loud. Goodbye now.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Asian Women of Power podcast. We encourage you to apply what you've learned here today to make your life a little bit better every day. For more tips, tools, practical ideas, and conversations around a business, life, and relationships so that you too can live life loud. we invite you to join the Asian Women of Power Facebook group at www.joinasianwomenofpower.com.